Our next session is on new screening technology. We have representatives from Tyrex Corporation representing PowerScreen, Ian Williams, Vice President of PowerScreen Mid-Atlantic LLC, and Owen Smith, Territory Manager of Virginia and Carolinas.
North America, yeah.
North America. Of PowerScreen USA are here to talk about new PowerScreen technologies. So, welcome.
Well, thanks, Bob, and thanks to the council for inviting us down. We've never really been down here before, and I guess it's probably something to do with how the industry's evolving. Typically, we've been focused on aggregate production, stone, sand, that kind of thing. But more and more, we're seeing our equipment moving into applications like soil and mulch, into topsoil recycling, that kind of thing. So we're seeing a bit of a convergence. So I'm hoping to introduce you to some new technologies today, and hopefully you'll learn something new. So I'm Owen Smith. Like Bob said, I work for the manufacturer PowerScreen.
And I'm Ian Williamson. I'm the Vice President of PowerScreen Mid-Atlantic. We cover the PowerScreen range with the dealer for the PowerScreen range in the Carolinas and the Virginias.
And today we're going to talk you through, we're going to focus on screens, but just to give you a brief overview of what we do. PowerScreen manufactures in four areas: crushers, screens, conveyors, and parts and service after support. PowerScreen has been around for 51 years now. Founded in Ireland, that's where I'm from, probably guessed by the accent. Now American owned by Tyrex Corporation, who also do CBI grinders, which I'm sure you're familiar with, along with a lot of different equipment in the gravel and aggregates industries. We're a world leader, and we're pretty happy to say that, in crushing and screening. It's hard to get exact figures, but in North America, based on the EDA information, we probably hold about 50% of the market share in mobile screening equipment. So I'm just going to give you a brief overview of where the market is at the minute in terms of the product ranges that are available. You can split this a couple of ways. The types of screening plant: there's screens, which are run by screen boxes. They use vibration to separate the pieces. Then there's trommels, which use rotation, which I'm guessing most of you are probably more familiar with. You can also divide that further by mobile and static. Now, static is typically used for bigger plant setups, that kind of thing, where you're going to be producing a single predefined spec of product. You know what your feed material is going to be, and there's not much variation. Mobile is a bit different. Mobile tends to be used in sites small to medium range, where what you're making tends to change quite a lot. What you're looking at here is a Warrior 2100. This would be our second biggest screen of this inclined screen style. The setup time's pretty quick. These can be brought into a site on the back of a truck, set up and ready to go in 15 minutes. There's no bolts involved. Everything's just pins and hydraulic levers. So the real benefit for mobile over static is its versatility. These can be brought in, set up to whatever spec you're making by changing the screen mesh, the media that you're using. That if you move between different applications, you can change that as well. You can also change the layout. So if you imagine you've got multiple plants set up together, you can change the layout of those to produce different types of material.
One of the main advantages of the track portable range is that if you have multiple sites, in the old days you used to have a big static setup on each site, or even a wheeled portable plant on each site, which you move around. But as you probably know, a wheeled portable, once you've got it in position and you've jacked it up, cribbed it up, it's not really portable anymore, so you're still bringing the product to the machine. Whereas when it's on tracks, it's easier to move from one site to another, and even around the same site. It can move by remote control, so to move the machine to the material is a lot easier than bringing the material to the machine.
And that's how quickly it's set up in that kind of time.
you're talking approximately 10 to 15 minutes from arriving on site to actually running the machine. So it's very feasible to go to one site one day, move it to another site the next day, you know, in extreme circumstances. We have many machines that on our rental fleet that, you know, we rent for the week or the month or longer than that, as well as sale and lease. But the main feature of these machines is how easily they move around the site and from one place to another.
Okay, one that you're going to be more familiar with is trommels. So here you can see one of our mobile trommels working. The key difference between these and screens, there's a few, but trommels tend to be used in topsoil applications and mulch because they're very good at turning the pieces over and separating pieces which tend to get stuck together on a screen. And they use rotation rather than vibration to separate, and that's got some features, it's got some limitations as well. So some of the things, and Terex make trommels, so I'm not just talking bad about these for the sake of it. They're expensive to change the media on from two reasons. The media itself is expensive, and the large drums that you have to buy, it's also difficult to change. You know, depending on the size of the trommel, you might be able to use an excavator to change the barrel, probably not recommended, or you can also use a crane to take it out. Another issue is they're prone to spiking. This means when the material gets stuck inside the media, you know, can, if it stays in there and gets built up on, that can deform the drum. The brushes are in place to like nullify that, but doesn't always work. There's limited force to separate the material. All you're relying on is that tumbling force. For some applications, that's enough, but for others, you need more aggressive acceleration. And again, limited versatility. You can see here there's two conveyors coming off that. You're only ever going to make two products with this machine. And again, if you wanted to change from making one product spec to another one, you're going to need to completely replace that drum, which isn't cost effective in certain applications. Okay, the next part is sizing and separation. There's two groups of factors that affect how screening works and how it performs. The first is material factors. This is what you guys are stuck with, really. It's the material you get in, how the spec of the material you're trying to make, the moisture content that's in it, the shape of the feed material. Ian actually said this to me to add this one today, age of the material, something I haven't really thought about much, but in your application, obviously, you have to continuously check to see what the temperature is, how much it's decomposing, because obviously that affects the composition and the product that you're able to make. The feed size, the maximum feed size of the piece going into the machine, and the physical material attributes, its hardness, its density, all that kind of thing. So that stuff, as a manufacturer and as a distributor, we don't have any control over. Where we come into it then is the machine factors. Now these are all of the things that are part of the machine and also how it's run by the operators that can affect it. There's another list of them there. I don't need to run through them all. We're just going to pick out a couple of, the technologies that we're going to show you are improving on some of these and changing how they interact with the machine and others. So these are the key problems that you tend to run into in incline screening. Blinding is a big problem, especially if the material is damp or sticky, it binds to the mesh, and the more that happens, that reduces your overall screening area and therefore your throughput. Similarly, pegging, where the material near size to the mesh gets stuck in it, it becomes difficult to dislodge and again reduces the overall screening size that you've got to work with. A big factor that drives this is the material stickiness, how much it clumps together, how much it clumps to the mesh. And like, as it says at the top, problems of low acceleration, there's ways to get around these problems, and if you've seen screens that have been blinded over or pegged before, then hopefully you'll get an idea that some of the technologies we're going to show you will go ways to solving these problems. So this is one such technology, it's called FlipFlow. If you guys are familiar with Spalik and the work that they do, they are pioneers in this area, and we actually work with them to use their technology in our machines. you tend to get about 30 Gs of acceleration, and to give you a reference point, typical screening is between 5 to 10 Gs, so it's a big leap ahead. And what this means is you impart a lot more energy into the deck and you can get a lot more separation between the pieces. This is actually looking inside the bottom deck of one of our plants working. If you've ever seen a screen working before, you've probably never seen something like that where it's jumping right up into the air. And you can see there's a lot of separation between the decks, which means there's more space for the material to move freely. So I'm going to show you a little bit on how this works. Hopefully you can see that. Essentially, you've got your standard screen box. The key difference is here down at the bottom. Now you can see those red mats moving. How that movement happens is you have another deck which is only fixed by rubber springs to the box, and it moves independently back and forth. As it moves back and forth, it creates this trampoline effect, and that's what throws the material up and imparts a greater force onto it and increases the separation. So I just thought it'd be worthwhile going back to look at this now that you know how the mechanism works, so you can see what's happening. One industry that's actually using this quite a lot, which you might may or may not have come across, is auto recycling, where they shred the cars, that kind of thing. Although it's a lot different to soil and mulch, the material properties of having long, complex pieces which are difficult to separate, they run into the same problems that you guys do. So this solution, although we haven't seen it much in your industry, we think it's something that could transfer across pretty well. On the top deck then, which is above where you saw that flip flow deck, you want to stop any big pieces going into your finer materials, into your soils, if you're making topsoil or that kind of thing. That can be tricky, especially with long pieces that tend to go through large meshes and fall down into the bottom deck. One way that we've come up with to sort of prevent this is to use what we call 3D punch plate. The best picture there is probably the diagram there up in the top left. And what happens is, as long pieces come onto the deck, instead of falling through, they're guided by the angle of the mesh to just continue moving over the deck. And this prevents them going down and contaminating your soils and that kind of thing, so you get a tighter spec, clean product. Another way to prevent, well, not sure what happened there with that video. So this is a ball deck. So essentially, similar idea, you're trying to prevent blinding pegging, that kind of thing. What a ball deck does is you have two wire meshes with these balls locked in between it, and they act as agitators to prevent any material blocking the deck. All these things, you know, from an operator standpoint, that means less time cleaning the machine, it means more time running clean material and utilizing the full area that you've got to work with. So this company, FlexMat, we've been working with them for quite a while, and they make high frequency screens. And essentially, with typical mesh, you've got a sort of interlocking mesh and it's fixed and it moves in tandem with your screen box. The difference with FlexMats is they're all independent wires which form the same kind of shape. It's kind of like a diamond. So they form the same mesh, but each wire is independent, and what that means is you get a lot more vibration for each time the screen box moves. I think Ian was telling me he's got more experience with this than I do, but they typically get about 30% more screening for the same surface area, so it makes a big difference if you're trying to get the most out of your plant.
And you can get different designs of FlexMats. You know, they do diamond wire, and they also do and Z-wire. So it depends what product you're doing. We can match the screen for the product. But efficiency is the key, and with FlexMats, it's pretty much 30% more efficient. So basically, if you've got a 10x5 screen, it increases that by 30% if you're using standard wire.
You can see here, this is in aggregates again, but then you can notice once they come off side by side, which they will in a second, on the right side where they're using the major wire, where they're using this FlexMat technology, The screen's a lot less busy. More screening action is going on at the top of the deck, and there's less carryover of larger piece sizes into the oversized material.
And when we're using the flex mats on topsoil applications, when the topsoil's quite wet and quite sticky, we'll use stainless steel flex mats on the bottom deck, and they stay clean really, really well. I mean, under extreme circumstances, they will stay clean. I'm not saying they're not, you know, they won't block up if you push it too much, but they stay a lot cleaner than if you ever used a standard wire.
Okay, so what we've shown you up until this point is pretty much different media that you can use in a standard screen box design. What we're going to show you now is new screen box designs themselves, how they're driven, how they move, which has really changed some of our machines in the past few years. So the first one is a triple shaft design. So typically you have a single shaft with weights running at either side, and this drives the acceleration and the vibration in the box. With a triple shaft, as the name suggests, you've got three shafts running parallel, which increases the weight and the force that's driving the screen, and therefore the acceleration that's getting imparted into it. So in this video here, it's in a recycling application where they're trying to strip the topsoil out of it. It tends to be in the stickier applications. We have brick, we have asphalt. Those are where you're going to really struggle to separate soil from the contaminants. With this technology, with the higher aggression, it gives you a lot more force to do that and gets you more screening in a smaller footprint, in a smaller screen box area. So you can see there, that's how the mechanism works. You've got three geared drive shafts. The center one is actually driving the other two. And it's a bit difficult to see in that video. There's different weights that you can add in. Each of those little holes on the flyways can take plug weights, and what that allows you to do is change the throw of the screen. So you can either throw the material more vertically or you can throw it more horizontally, and what that means is if you've got really difficult or sticky material to separate, you can slow it down so it stays on the screen for longer and there's better separation of the pieces.
It's like reversing a screen box, where if you put the weights in one in the back holes, it actually keeps the material on the screen a lot more. Or you can have vertical movement or even a forward movement. So each application, depending if it's fine screening or coarse screening, you can change the weights to suit the application. This is a good application I wanted to show you, because a lot of topsoil applications and mulch applications, you can use a trommel. Most if not all of you probably use trommels. But some applications where you want to remove the topsoil from very coarse and nasty material, it's very hard to use a trommel because of the size of the infeed. In this application here, this is in a landfill, and what they're doing is they're recycling the landfill, which is becoming more and more popular because landfill space is running out. So in this application here, I was on this site, this landfill, that area of the landfill was 46 years old. And what you see is what it comes out of the landfill after 46 years. Most of the newspapers, the cardboard, the material, the food is all decomposed, and you've still got metal in it, you've still got some pieces of wood, a lot of plastic, even some newspapers still survive. But in an application like this, where you've got rocks, you've got steel, you've got pieces of wood, the last thing you want is those tumbling around in a trommel, because it just beats the hell out of the drum or the screen media in the trommel. Whereas in this application, you can get away with the oversize, because you've got a feeder and the screen, and then the oversize conveyor is all in line. So there's no real concern for the screen, as long as you keep your infeed below, say, 24 or 30 inches. And what they'll use in this application, what they'll use is the topsoil. That's a 2-inch minus topsoil, what they're pulling out. They actually reuse that as the cap in there for the new segments of the landfill. The forward product, a lot of that will go to a recycling yard where they actually remove the steel, remove the wood, which they can grind, and remove the plastic. So you can very easily keep up with the landfill. You've got material coming in, but you can recycle it, recycle the landfill 30, 40, 50 years old, and it's becoming a big business, especially in Virginia. A lot of the big landfills near the cities, the cities are not allowing them to expand the landfill, so the only option is either to close it down or to recycle the landfill.
This video then, this is the smallest machine that we have in this this range, in the Warrior range, is the Warrior 600. It's so small, we ship them in from India in containers. We purpose built a factory there about 5 years ago, and they're a great little machine. You know, you wouldn't think for the size of them. They're 11 by 4 screening area on the top deck, but they've got a lot of acceleration compared to older models of a similar size. So essentially what I wanted to show you here was the size of it, and this kind of goes on from Ian's point about what you can put through one of these machines. Even though this is pretty small, we've got pieces running over here which are 20, 30 inches across, and really your limitation here is the width of the feeder. So compared with what goes through a trommel, you know, you can be a bit less selective about what you put through a screen. And again, it's set up here for three products. That sort of, you can also set it up for two products if you want to blend the two smaller products or that kind of thing. You can also do that.
And on a product, on a machine like this, for the small to medium size operation, it's still capable of 150 ton an hour of throughput. And as Owen says, you're making three products. So the oversize in this product is mainly stone, so that would probably get crushed, used as an aggregate. The half inch miner's topsoil would be a saleable product, and then the mid product, maybe a waste product. But it gives you the advantage of being able to make three products there, instead of just two, which you do with the trommel.
So the next innovation to talk about here is twin screen boxes. This is something that really we didn't anticipate how popular this was going to be when we introduced it, and we're pleasantly surprised. So to go back a little bit, typically you've got a single screen box on a machine with a single shaft in the middle. Now, as the boxes get bigger, and on our biggest ones they get up to in and around 20 foot long, you get these dead points at either end, and that's just caused by the steel flexing as it gets further away from the center of the drive. What that means is, okay, you've got a big screening area, but you don't have great acceleration at either end. So one way we came up with a solution to get around this was to introduce twin screen boxes, each of them driven independently with their own drive. This has a number of benefits. First of all, you don't get those dead areas at the end. We actually have a smaller machine in our range that uses the same size of box as this, as one of these boxes. So effectively, it's like having two of those together at once. And to give you an idea, this combined is about 22 foot of screening area versus our next biggest machine, which is about 20 foot length of screen. And the increase in production is about 20 to 25%. The increase in cost is about 10%. So the increase in production outstrips the increase in cost dramatically, and we're seeing a lot of uptake in these, surpassing and replacing the previous model. So you have that. You also have, it's not that easy to see here, but you have a slight angle between the two boxes. And the reason for that is, as material moves down and from the top box, it creates a tumbling effect between the two, and that means you get to turn more complex pieces over and you get a better, cleaner product. The other reason is typically the easy to separate stuff comes out pretty quickly, so you want the material running fast over the top box at the steeper angle and then slower over the second box at the lower angle to make sure your sizing and your product spec is tight and within your limits. This video is actually from our dealer in the UK, Blue Group, and they've been running the machine in a topsoil application. And I'll just let you watch it, it's pretty good.
with this machine here, the one you see here is a two-deck screen. We actually do this model as well in the three-deck, so it gives you the ability of making up to four products.
I know it's difficult to compare, but in sand and aggregate production, this machine will do 700 ton an hour. It's difficult to translate that across into soil and mulch because of the difference in density and that kind of thing, but it's a lot. The last part's a little bit different. It's not a mechanical change or anything like that. It's the introduction of telematics and mobile intelligence into our range. We've been doing this for a while now. We've been doing it since about mid-2016, and we've got in and around, I think it's about 500 plants at the minute worldwide that are running with our custom telematics offering we call PowerScreen Pulse. Basically, this pretty similar to telematics, which you're probably familiar with. You get your operating data, your tonnages, the status of the machine, where it is, the fuel usage, the fuel consumption, and also some things that you might be not as familiar with, like how much it's using wear parts and when those need to be replaced. So essentially, to give you a brief overview of how it works, the machine takes data inputs from the machine itself, from the engine, from the clutch. Those are transmitted by two modes. We chose to go with cellular and satellite. The reason being, our machines are often in remote locations, in quarries, that kind of thing. Most of the time you do get cell signal, but not always. When you have satellite backup, it means that if you don't have cell signal, it sends it by satellite. It's a bit slower, but it still is able to send a signal every hour to feed us back the information from that machine. And then you can pick it up on your laptop, your tablet, your smartphone, and it's real-time communication. If you want to check it any time of day or night, it's always there. Okay, so why is it valuable? This is a bit of a screenshot of the interface. The top line there, I know it's a little hard to see for you, but that pie chart is the work hours in red, the idle hours in blue, and the track hours in yellow. If you've got machines, if you're managing a fleet of equipment of 30, 40 machines, and you're seeing one of your machines is sitting idle 70% of the time, you know there's a problem there. This allows you to manage that at a fleet level, so that if necessary, you can substitute smaller machines in where there's not as much need for a bigger one, or you can redeploy your assets somewhere where they're useful.
Or fire your operator.
Or that. The next sort of the next great thing that I think is going to be sort of these are going to be used for, and what we're seeing it used for, is increasing production. How this can be used to increase production is pretty simple. I've seen it done already in an asphalt recycling plant down in Baltimore. They bought one of the machines, they put a belt scale on it. When you put a belt scale on, you can measure the total tonnage that's coming off it. If you combine that with the fuel consumption, it means that you can find that sweet spot of high production, high tonnage with low fuel consumption, and you can sort of conduct your own experiments over the course of a couple of days, run it in one setup for one day, run it in the next setup another day, and see where you can get the most sort of bang for your buck out of the machine. We also have the option then to put in the cost per ton, so you don't have to do that calculation yourself. You can actually see what you're using in terms of your fuel cost. The next one then is service coverage, and to be honest, this is probably more at the dealer level than the end user level where it comes into play. We can see everything that's going on with the machine, which means you can see everything that's going wrong with it. which sometimes I'm told that happens, but not very often. We get to see the fault codes that are in the operations manual. All of that comes in remotely as it happens. Again, this means like Ian's team of service engineers, before they even go out to a site, they can see a list of the fault codes. If it's an issue that the machines had before, they're able to diagnose that a lot quicker, and it means that they're better prepared when they get to site.
We can also monitor, and our service manager monitors the machines out in the field, and once they get close to service time, when the, you know, the oil needs changing, whatever, it will alert him that. So he knows that the machine needs a service before the operator calls it. So it's very useful.
And then just below that is the sensor history. There's a lot of sensors on these machines. When we introduced this telematic system, we didn't try to add a load of stuff on to try and capture this information. It was already being captured by the machine. Now, with the system, what it means is you can just go and get it remotely. You don't need to be at the machine. And it's also stored permanently forever with all the information for the complete history of the machine. So if something happens a while back and you need to check what happened last year, last month, you can go back and check that. Just before I finish, there's a couple of other features there which I think are pretty cool on the telematics. Say you have a machine which is working on a specific site and it can't go outside of that site. Say you've had machines stolen, it's unlikely, but that kind of thing can happen. You can set alerts on your machine, so if they move outside a specific area, you're informed right away. Likewise, if machines are running outside of the time that you want them to be running, you can get alerts on that. And I think those features are pretty useful. So I just wanted to make a note of those. That's really it. Thanks for your time. Have you got any questions?
You're all ready for a drink. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got a little time. I want to thank you all for your presentation.